From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone, to the show. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast right here at 1510 AM Revolution Boston. And the show is Dr. Bernie Siegel, Mind Health Matters. And we are here to share and enlighten you with all his sacred wisdom. So good day, Bernie.
Thank you, Deb.
Yes, and so today I'm really excited because we're going to be talking about Dr. Brian Weiss and past lives, and you actually had a conversation with him a while back about that, so go right ahead.
Well, let me start. Our connection started at Yale before I really knew him, that I was a practicing surgeon, and he was a medical student who was going to go into psychiatry. And later on, he told me when he was on the surgical rotation, he always wanted to be in the operating room with me because I was not a normal surgeon, you know, and it was more interesting for a psychiatrist to have a surgeon who played music, talked to patients while they were anesthetized, and did all kinds of things with imagery and drawings and, you know, not just the mechanical aspects of surgery. And so years later, I learned that from him, that he enjoyed that. But his first book, I think, was Many Minds, Many Masters, where he talked about past life. And, you know, a lot of things are hard for me to accept. I always say that I don't live by my beliefs. I live by my experience. And I'll get into that later. But meaning that if I experience something, whether it's a medical treatment or a past life or, you know, hypnosis or whatever, and it helps me, then I know it works. Even if I can't explain it. I don't say what I've heard from a lot of doctors, I can't accept that. And I'm telling them a true story, see, about a patient, and they'll say, I can't accept that. Mm. So you could read Brian's books and say, I can't accept that. Or people are making it up, or it's a dream, or, you know, when they talk about near-death experience, it's something going on in the brain. If you're comfortable with life and don't need to understand how something happened, it's like saying to an astronomer or a quantum physicist, how did the Earth, you know, come about? They can't really explain it. Yeah, there are theories, and they can talk to you about various atomic particles and things, but life of itself is a miracle. So let me just leave it with that and say, I therefore live by what I experience. But when Brian first came out with this, and one of the things that always puzzled me and bothered me was time. And I would say to him, look, you know, this doesn't make sense, because I sit in meetings of compassionate friends, adults who have had their children die, and you listen to stories, and I don't make up any of these. You're driving down the parkway, you hear your son's voice say, Mom, slow down, and a seagull lands in the parkway right in your lane, so you slow down. And her son was always fascinated by seagulls. She then drives around a turn on the parkway, and there's a sheet of ice and 20 cars piled up. And she realizes, my son, you know, saved my life. Another was a man whose son loved butterflies, and the boy dies, and the father's out walking in the woods in Connecticut and sees this really gorgeous butterfly, and the butterfly follows him. And he finally goes home, looks it up in a book that his son had, and it's a butterfly that only lives in South America.
Mm.
And the other was one more that fascinated me because it was personal, that a woman was sitting in our support group. We had an open window. It was springtime. And she was talking about her daughter who was murdered. And she said, my other daughter got married at an outdoor wedding. A bird, which our daughter loved, was sitting in the tree and started cackling so loudly it interrupted the service. And everybody said, well, your daughter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
While she's telling the story, in the open window flew a bird. Now, we've sat in that room for years. You know, I've never had a bird fly in or even bump into the window, you know, and here it flies in while she's talking. And, of course, everybody's reaction was, oh, it's your daughter.
Right.
Now, my problem, you see, with Brian was, Brian, look, the child died. You're talking about 5-10 years later, you know, that these events happen. I said, then the kid's a bum. And Brian said, what are you talking about? I said, look, if it's 5 years since the child dies, why isn't the kid in kindergarten, say, or in junior high school? Why is he just hanging around? And Brian's answer would always be, Bernie, there's no time when you leave your body. There's no time. And that was a concept that I have to say I couldn't accept because it just didn't make sense to me. How can there not be time? And then, I'm not the only one who believes this in the sense of therapists I know who have said before they research something, they see if it's in a song or a poem or a play, because they know that the writers have observed life and incorporated it, and that it's likely that what they then research will come out to be true. Well, I'm watching the show Carousel, in which a man, during a robbery, he's shot and dies. His wife has just had a baby, and the angel comes and shows him around through the show. And one day, the angel comes to him and says, hey, would you like to see your daughter graduate from high school? And the man says, what are you talking about? She's a baby. And the angel says, this is Rodgers and Hammerstein, there's no time up here.
Mm-hmm.
That blew my mind. You know, where did they come from with that? But what I began to understand is that when you leave your body, time doesn't exist. I mean, it exists for the body in a sense of change and aging. But if you're not in a body, time doesn't exist. So consciousness does not relate to time. And my feeling truly about past lives is, I use the term impregnate, that when we are born, the consciousness of those who has preceded us can impregnate our brain, so to speak, our mind, and become a part of us. So I don't talk about reincarnation or even the word past lives. I mean, it's not my life. It is a past life, but it's I wasn't there, okay, and I'll get into that. But
yeah. But
it's the consciousness and the experience of another person. And one example, like yesterday, somebody sent me an email, you know, the like YouTube type thing, of an 8-year-old playing the piano and singing like an opera singer.
Mm.
You know, now my feeling is, how does that happen to an 8-year-old? Well, I think that she has within her the consciousness of somebody who was a musician and a singer. So she's able to sit down at age 8 and do that kind of thing.
Mm.
And it's not just genes, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, yeah. Let's go back for a second. Now, when you say it wasn't your life, and I get the consciousness of someone else, are you saying that it's still your soul?
What do you mean by soul?
That the soul, our souls are our souls that continue and come here from a past life to a future life, but the soul is the same. But you're saying the consciousness is taken on from another person? Am I wrapping my mind around the soul piece correctly with what you're sharing?
I don't know. It's a little hard for me to understand what you're inferring by the soul. I mean, you could say that there is an individuality or an essence, you know, in me. that I have my soul, but that my soul can also experience what other souls have experienced in the past.
Yes,
and
yes.
So I'm aware of that, and it then affects my choices and the things that I do and become.
Yes, right.
And the no coincidences, because even things like Brian wrote about years ago where, I mean, one of the things was somebody telling him, I don't remember all the details, I think he had a child die, and this patient of his who discussed that and had no way of knowing this, you know what I mean? It wasn't something public or talked about, and yet he knew it. And people meeting in his waiting room who connected, and they had shared a past life. So I think that those are, as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross used to say, the no coincidences.
Correct.
That there are these, I don't want to use the word powers, but it's this consciousness that creates our future. So it's like an inner voice that is directing us to do things. And I think when you truly do them, it's something, because Brian just put out a book with many stories. There's the word miracles in the title also. And I just put out a book of miracles. So it's interesting how those things came out close together. But my feeling is, you see, when these so-called miracles happen that we could call no coincidences, it's when you are choosing life, is the way I put it. Mm-hmm. When you're making choices to benefit everyone, that you're not being selfish and saying, okay, what's good for me, you know? Never mind everybody else. How am I going to be a winner? But when you're looking to make life a winner, then amazing things happen. You know, people appear, you're in the right place at the right time, that type of thing. And what happened to me, and let me just, you know, get personal, because, again, I did not pursue this. See, that's, as I said, why it fascinates me, because of the experience. I did not go to Brian or some other therapist and say, all right, I want to be regressed. I want to see what happens. I was on the telephone with a friend, and she was asking me how I'm doing and what am I doing, and I told her all the lectures and travel and all the things I was doing. And she said, Bernie, why are you living this life? Now, that's a statement made to me over the telephone, okay?
Right.
I went into a trance. And I said to her, oh, my God, I said, I got a sword in my hand and I'm killing people. Maybe that's why I became a surgeon. And then, you know, her talking to me brought me back to the present, if you know what I mean. Then the picture disappeared. But again, what happens? I'm on a plane trip cross-country a few days later, and suddenly I went into a trance. And the only way I can describe it to people is to say, it's like somebody puts up a movie screen and you're watching yourself in a movie.
Exactly.
I mean, you're in it, but you're also, in a sense, watching it. I don't know how else to describe it.
Right. Yes.
What I saw was myself being, well, I might as well tell you the whole story so you'll get the meaning of it. It took place in Ireland, just because of connections I have with Ireland. And, you know, the no coincidence kind of things. And I'm a knight. My lord calls me in and says, I'm having conflict over land with the neighbor. I want you to go and kill his daughter to teach him a lesson. And I said, why don't I just kill her? I mean, kill him. No, I want you to kill his daughter so he'll be punished. I said, well, what if I don't do it? I don't want to kill her. Then I will kill you. I said, all right, I'm going. And off I went. And I got to their castle, and I lied to them. I said, I'm traveling. Can I stop here for a few days? And they said, sure, no problem. I learned where this young lady's room is. I learned she had a dog, so I would give the dog treats so it would know me. And when I learned where her bedroom was, because I very much wanted to kill her at night so she wouldn't be awake and would suffer less, I went up a flight of stairs and entered her room. And the dog was in the bedroom with her. And I thought the dog would know me and be okay, but he gets up and starts growling. And I didn't want him to wake her up, so I raised the sword and killed the dog. But the cry of the dog and the noise of killing him, splitting his head open, awakened the young woman. And she turns and looks at me. And it was my wife. I mean, the woman I'm married to now.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally chopped her head off. I just raised the sword and wham.
Amazing.
And then I took the head back to my Lord. And I said, okay, you happy now? And he said, I didn't do this. You did it. It was your choice.
Right.
Now, I cried for hours after that.
Yeah.
It was just one of the most overwhelming things that ever happened to me. And it was all spontaneous, you know, sitting there in an airplane and having it happen.
Wow.
So it taught me a lot of things, some of which were how my wife's face has always meant so much to me. I mean, you know, I can be mad as hell at something, and all she has to do is look at me, and it's like, oh, okay, that's done.
Yes. Well, hold that thought, Bernie, right, because we need to take our first break.
Yeah, because then we'll get into the real meaning behind it.
Yes, thank you. And everyone, stay with us. Don't go away.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bovee on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Would you like to be a radio star? Now there's a show that allows holistic business owners to test the radio wave waters with ease. Host your own show on the Global Holistic Exchange. Send your message over the Greater Boston airwaves and internationally via the Internet. For more information, contact Deborah Bovee, Deborah at DreamVision7Radio.com or call 508-226-1723, 508-226-1723. The Global Holistic Exchange is all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Saturday at 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Psychic Java with Susan Peters is pouring you a cup of enlightenment. Listen to Psychic Java every first and second Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central Time. This show will bring about spiritual healing, a catalyst to lead you to your own healing abilities. Call in, ask questions, and receive answers, or share your experiences and views. This program is part of the Dream Visions 7 Radio Network.
Ever wonder what your life has in store for you or what the next best step is for you to take? Tune in to Ada Marie, the true golden oracle, an extraordinary life extension specialist, seer, healer, and teacher. Hear your answers every first and third Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Listen and be amazed.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Mind Health Matters with Bernie Siegel, MD. His show can be heard on Dream Vision 7 radio station, as we are broadcasting here at 1510 AM. I should back up. Every first Saturday at Revolution Boston, 1510 AM, at 3 PM, you'll be able to hear Dr. Bernie Siegel. And then on Dream Vision 7 radio, his show is heard Wednesday through Friday, 12 noon and 12 a.m. So you can always catch the show there, and goes on to our other affiliates, also on iTunes. You can download it to your iPad, all those good things. And so we're talking about past lives. There's no time. And, Bernie, you were just speaking about seeing your wife's face. So go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I was very moved and disturbed by this whole thing. I also had a dream right about that time about this iridescent white cat. And I presumed his name or her name, I mean, I don't know the sex of the cat, but it was a big white cat and just sparkly, that it was called Diamond. But people weren't pronouncing it right. They were saying Diamond and no D at the end. And I just was in such a turmoil over the emotions that were involved in this past life experience. And then in front of me, the name James Hillman came up in three different articles I was reading. He's a Jungian therapist whom I admire. And I thought, okay, here's his name three times. I don't think that's ever happened before or after in my life. You know, in something I'm reading, I got to call him. So I called him up. Fine, he lives in Connecticut, where I am. And he said, fine, drive up here. I'll help you. And I thought, what a wonderful guy. So I drive up, and I start telling him, see, about my Lord said. He said, Bernie, what? Do you hear what you're saying? You're saying my Lord. I said, yeah, it's the Lord of the castle. He said, Bernie, it's more than that. Mm-hmm. It's your Lord. And that really hit me, because I said to him, you know, it's always bothered me how Abraham could say yes to God, or why Jesus didn't jump off the cross. You know, that you can bring up all these questions. And I really began to understand that it was a matter of faith, you see. He said, right. Bernie, you have to go and relive this and see what you can learn from it. Mm-hmm. And he also explained to me, when I told him about this strange cat, he said, Bernie, it's not a diamond like a jewel piece of jewelry. It's Diamond, D-A-I-M-O-N. It's your spirit, you know, like the acorn grows into an oak tree. It's your essence.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to get in touch with. Well, I went home, and I went into a trance again, spontaneously. And in it, there's my Lord saying to me, okay, I want you to kill the neighbor's daughter. I said, fine, I'm heading right out, going to go do it. And then I felt a hand on my shoulder as I turned around. He said, Bernie, I was just seeing if you had faith in me. Now that I know you have faith, I want you to go. And he didn't call me Bernie, but he said, I wanted to know and needed to know if you had faith in me. And now that I know you have faith, I'm not asking you to kill her. I'm asking you to go and convince her and her father that they can come here. We can work this out, and they will be safe and secure. I will not harm them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go and do that. And I spent many days there trying to convince them. And I said to the young lady one day, I said, look, I will stand in front of you. I will protect you. I am telling you, you're safe. You can go. And the father, I didn't know he was nearby, said, I heard you. I believe you. We will go. And so we all go back, and as we meet in the hall, I stand in front of them, and my Lord says, what are you standing there for? I want to talk to these people. I said, I'm protecting them. He said, step aside. You know that no harm will come to them. And then he looked at me and the young woman, and he said, you know, I want to solve this problem with the land, and I can see that the two of you have fallen in love with each other. So what we will do, you will get married, and we will give you the land as a gift. So there will be nothing to fight over anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And boom, you know, it's all settled and solved with no injury, killing, murder, war. And it was just such a beautiful, peaceful feeling. And I even feel now that how did the two of us get married, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was sort of an accident. I mean, we were both working at a day camp, and both were working with first graders, my wife with the girls, I with the boys. And so we often, you know, met each other. But even our first date was an accident. We're just standing near the pool and talking about how nice it was to go there at night because the counselors are allowed to come back and take a swim in the evening. And my wife, my future wife, she said to me, are you asking me out on a date? And I wasn't. I was just describing, you know, how they, nice it was to have the pool available. But as soon as she said, are you asking? Yes, of course. You know, here's this beautiful woman. Am I going to say no? And so it all, you know, it's like one accident after another, but there are no accidents and no coincidences.
And, right. All of it all, weaves in together.
Yeah, all happened. But yeah. I really felt that, you see, the other thing that helped me understand, not only the killing of a person, but the killing of an animal, that why do you become a doctor? You see, now I'm using a knife to cure people, not kill people.
Right.
We're always rescuing animals, even now, without children to help us. We got four cats and two dogs in the house. I mean, you know, it's like we've always been doing this. When the kids were here, we may have had 30 or 40 different creatures, every exotic pet you can mention that people rejected throughout, we took in. You know, so we've had squirrels, skunks, kinkajous, rabbits, all kinds of birds and furry animals and, goats in the yard, ducks and geese. And, you know, and again, they were all cared for. And I always say the reverence for life that Schweitzer always talked about, that's what our kids learned from all these creatures. And they became family. Because I have to tell you some humorous anecdotes that when the ducks and geese would lay eggs, they would get incubated by the kids and hatched. And what's called imprinting, in other words, when you pop out of the egg, the first thing you see imprints upon you. It's like, there's my parents, see? So they would look out, and who's there? The kids. So the kids became the parents of all these ducks and geese. And they would follow the kids everywhere. I mean, the biggest problem was in the morning. The kids would get on the school bus, and the ducks and geese tried to get on the bus with them. They would follow them down to the bus stop and then, you know, try to get on. I mean, the drivers got to know and didn't get upset. But when we would have too many ducks and geese, my mother lived and father lived on a lake, so we would take them there and release them on the lake. And one day my mother called. I got a question for you. What is it? The neighbors want to know. Every time a school bus pulls up, the ducks and geese come out of the lake and run up to the street. And I laughed. I said, they're looking for our kids. But that just shows you the connections, you know, that we make with each other.
Exactly.
That are meaningful and with all forms of life.
That's right. And, may I ask you a question going back to when you would go in the trances, what you learned from that? How has it changed your life in the human form that you're living now?
Well, I mean, what I share with people is to accept these things so that you understand yourself better, you see. Because my feeling is this. I mean, you could say to me, Bernie, that's nuts. It never happened. Okay, but it was therapeutic, you see.
Right.
It helped me understand myself, and it helped me understand questions of faith. And I'd say
choices.
That's true. I always say that's true of the mafia as well as Abraham, you know.
Right.
That you want to work with people who have faith in you, who are not acting out of fear of you. See, even a line in the Bible that I found interesting, that it says Abraham feared God. And a rabbi said, no, Abraham feared separation from God. And that's the kind of things why I like to, as Joseph Campbell said, use the Bible, other myths, writings, as guidebooks to learn from.
Sure.
And I think this is, to me, what this experience was. It was a learning experience, what your personality is about, why you've chosen certain professions, why you're, you know, compassionately rescuing animals. I mean, it's you know, I always say it's like I'm a little sick. I mean, if I go down the animal shelter, I'm in real danger of bringing home another animal. And
yeah.
I mean, one of the things I always say now, don't tell them any names in your family, because my father's name was Simon. So I've walked in, and they had a cat named Simon and a dog named Simon. Of course, I said, how can I not take them home? So we have a cat named Simon running around the house, and we had a dog named Simon 2 years ago. And, you know, it's that kind of thing. I can't just say, oh, that's interesting, or that's a coincidence. It's okay, I'll take them home. And so it helped me to understand myself.
Right.
And why I am, you know, picking up worms in the street and slugs and all kinds of creatures and putting them back on the earth because I care about them.
Mm.
And I think it comes from this past experience, if you will, and, you know, valuing life and not disvaluing it. Because I think it relates a lot to all the things we're reading about in the paper now.
Right.
You know,
yeah. And the other piece of it is that there's two ways to go. When you're presented something like that, we have that free will of
right.
choice. But there's another way. We don't have to kill. We can talk through it, through a
yeah.
place, from a place of love. We can solve or bring up solutions, just like you did when you ended up marrying the girl
right.
and the land was given to you as the couple.
So
there's always another way.
I like the expression, kill with kindness, say.
Yeah.
Lament with tenderness. See, that was another one. Don Quixote. And see, you know, I'm talking about all these musical shows. You have a barmaid named Aldonza. She's abused by the men who come into the bar. Don Quixote shows up and calls her Dulcinea. I have sought thee, sung thee, dreamed thee, Dulcinea. And she says to him in the show, don't torment me with your tenderness. Wow.
Mm.
Here's this guy loving her, you know, and telling her she's beautiful and not someone to be abused physically and sexually. And she can't handle that. And that I learned as a doctor, too,
mm-hmm.
that when you gave people your love, in other words, through, you know, showing that you cared, your compassion, if the word love bothers people, but that you let them know you cared, you were compassionate, you were loving. I called it reparenting, that they ultimately began to care about themselves because nobody in their life had. So here's this, you know, Aldonza saying, hey, you know, stop with that nice stuff. It's making me uncomfortable. But if he persists in it, she will one day realize, I am worth something. This man did not give up on me. He did not reject me. He was not indifferent to me. So I must be worth something. And that's what I found. I was, you know, as a doctor like Don Quixote, that when people came in who were destructive, self-destructive, I didn't have to, I always say this to parents, I ask you to love your child. I didn't say you had to like what they're doing. You know, that there's a big difference. So you can discipline them just as you would, you know, if you bring a pet in the house and they poop on the floor. Yeah, you can get upset and let them know you don't act that way, but you keep loving them. When that happened, then ultimately they were able to realize I am of value and begin to love themselves and care for themselves and stop being self-destructive. And destructive of others as well. So it all ultimately blended in to understand that. And I personally work very hard at trying to be that way because I don't mean it in a negative way, but I am critical of myself in terms of how I behave every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I work hard at trying to be the person I would really like to be, and I can't recall a day that I would say, wow, you were perfect today, that's wonderful. But, you know, it doesn't stop me from trying, yeah.
Yeah,
and apologizing when I'm not.
Right, and that's a beautiful thing, Bernie, yeah. Because many people just go through their lives, but when we're conscious of the way we are acting or thinking, we can change that to a loving way.
Yeah.
And that's really why we're all here.
I just sent an email to somebody because of experience. Again, I had a woman who developed cancer, had alcoholic parents who were abusive, and, you know, she hears me talking about, say I love you to them. I mean, people, it's like, how can I say this to, you know, people who don't love me and abuse me? And anyway, she started saying I love you every morning before she left for work. And after 3 months, she came into the support group one day with a smile. I said, what happened? She said, I was late for work. I ran out of the house. My parents are in the street screaming, you forgot something. I said, I have my raincoat. I have my lunch. What are you talking about? And they said, you forgot to say I love you today.
Mm.
And there was a wonderful emotional scene in the street as they healed the family, embracing each other. And so I really tell that to people. You know, I prescribe it. They're all driving you nuts. Tell them I love you for 3 months and then skip a day. And see
right.
What happens. And, you know, it can be a message on the answering machine, a letter. I don't care how they do it, but to just say I love you whenever they're driving you nuts, say I love you. And people don't know how to deal with that. You know, if you haven't been brought up with love, when you're, well, I don't know if I told these stories on this program. Did I tell the story about Christ coming back during the Inquisition? Do you remember it at all?
I mean, a little bit, I believe.
Let's
hold
back.
That, Bernie, because we
right.
need to take another break.
Okay.
And let's come back with that. Okay?
Right.
So everyone, stay with this. Don't leave. Right. We'll be back in a moment.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at DreamVision7Radio.com.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bovee on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM Revolution Boston. And we are with Dr. Bernie Siegel, MD. I always want to say Dr. Bernie Siegel and his show Mind Health Matters. Now, as you all know, he has his own site, which is BernieSiegelMD.com. And Siegel is spelled S-I-E-G-E-L. Siegel, BernieSiegelMD.com. You can go there and get involved with his articles. All his books are there. You can communicate with him. And then if you want to save on any of Bernie's books and items, you can actually go to wisdomoftheages.biz. It's a store, Wisdom of the Ages, in Connecticut, owned by his son and his daughter-in-law, and you can save 15% on any of the items. What you do is, when ordering, place code 27 in the comment box during checkout, and you will actually receive a follow-up email from them showing the 15% deduction of your purchases. So remember that. Go on wisdomoftheages.biz, and the code is 27. Now, before the break, Bernie was speaking, started a new conversation about Christ, and so go right ahead with what you were wanting to share, Bernie.
Oh, yeah. There's several stories that just touched me about, again, people choosing love, but one that was by Dostoevsky, it's called The Grand Inquisitor, and Christ returns to earth during the Grand Inquisition, and he's put in a cell, and the Inquisitor comes into the cell and basically curses him and his work and what he said, and tells him they're going to burn him at the stake and all his followers will reject him because they're afraid they'll be thrown in the fire with him if they accepted his word, and on and on and on. And after all this negative, you know, statement that goes on and on, the Inquisitor stops and waits for the prisoner to retaliate, you know, to scream back at him, to do something. And then the next line that I found so powerful, it says, the prisoner walks over and kisses the Inquisitor gently on his bloodless, aged lips.
Mm.
What would you do then, say?
Mm.
Well, the Inquisitor opens the cell and says, go and come no more. And for me, that was another example of how powerful love can be. No,
right.
Think about this now, too, because of, again, what's going on in Colorado, and every few months it happens again, all right? There was an ad in the paper from the people in Arizona, you know, who have been wounded in that outdoor shooting. And what happens is a minister, and these were true stories, goes to Korea to run a church. His two sons go with him and keep encouraging him, you know, to have faith that just because the church isn't filled with people, you know, to be there and be loving, and they'll, you know, ultimately it will all work out and so forth. Well, the minister goes off for the weekend to work with some lepers. And when he comes home after the weekend, his sons have been murdered. And the police are able to capture the murderer. And, you know, he goes to court, he confesses and so forth. And then they have the day to sentence him. And the judge is about to sentence him to be executed when the minister, thinking of his sons and what they always told him, gets up, walks down the aisle of the court, puts his arm around the prisoner and says, judge, what is going to be gained by ending his life? Let me take him home with me and make him a son. And he takes him and walks out of the court with him. And it says, you know, the courtroom is in stunned silence as he leaves. And, you know, think about that.
Mm.
Boy. I mean, because I think, and not I think, I know, even a psychiatrist in USA Today was saying the same thing. Why do you go out and kill people? Because you were rejected and you're seeking revenge. There's a sentence that came from East of Eden by John Steinbeck that really, you know, was a knock on the head for me trying to understand life. He said, almost everyone experiences with rejection. With rejection comes desire for revenge. With revenge, guilt. And there is the story of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's all the headlines. I mean, why are we shooting people, killing people, hurting people? You see, and then so often, you know, the killer puts the gun to his head and ends his life.
Right.
You know, this young man the other day obviously didn't feel that guilt, so he didn't end his life. But, you know, when you're doing something like this, whether it's suicide or murder, it is not a simple act. You know, you have to be a murderer. You have to be willing to either die or kill someone. You're willing to hurt other people. I mean, look at all the people involved in this and the pain in the community.
I know.
So, you know.
Do you think paranoia feeds into it as well? Because based on what we've seen with his apartment all booby-trapped, kind of reminds me of, in a sense, like my mom, who was paranoid, where they feel as though they have to do all these things to protect themselves against others,
yeah,
as far
as
the apartment.
I mean, I suppose you could have somebody who's, you know, mentally deranged, but still, I think more has to happen. So that, you see, you'd say, where does the paranoia come from? Well, again, if you don't trust people, you know, if you don't have faith in people, yeah.
Yeah, it's because they weren't loved. And
yeah, you're protecting yourself from all these nasty people out in the world.
Right.
And this is something I say to everybody, you know, even those who are not mass murderers. I say, if you think the world is a nice place, you're a nice person.
Right.
Because what you're seeing in others is within you.
Exactly.
And again, it's something I work at all the time. You know, no matter what, race, religion, color, politics, I try to project love onto people. And let me say something I used to do, I forgot, because I would prescribe for people. I'd say, when you're walking down the street tomorrow, pick out a person, you know, say half a block away, and start sending them love. And just continue focusing your love on that person. And watch the look you get when they get next to you, you know, and then walk by you. I'm really impressed by that.
Right.
Because I know they're sensing something from me. And and so, again, you know, if you use it, yes, it changes your relationship with people.
Right. And that's really what you're saying, and what I'm saying too, is if you use love, there's such power to that that
right.
goes beyond the human thoughts. There's such power.
It is a weapon, and it carries energy with it. You
right.
know, that's a whole other thing about energy healing and so forth and so on. But you see, it's a common theme. That's the other part I'm always looking for. As I read various spiritual, religious books, the theme about healing each other is always about seeing, in a sense, the divinity, the perfection, the health in the other person, you know, not seeing everything that's wrong when you meet them,
right.
but seeing them as everything being right. And that's when things begin to change. And when we focus on the negative, we emphasize it, empower it, and create it. But when we focus on the positive aspects and the love, then we create that kind of a future.
Right. If everyone could realize that.
Mm.
And many are.
Well, we're waking up, and when science awakens to it also, to show that it is not nonsense or crazy. Because I was just writing a comment about an article on quackery, you see. But beliefs are not quackery. I mean, in other words, part of why quacks exist is people believe in them.
Mm-hmm.
So people do well, and the quack can get the credit. But it's really about the person's belief.
Right.
You see? I mean, one simple example was doctors giving treatment for cancer with four drugs. It began with the letters E, P, O, and H. And they labeled it the EPO protocol. One doctor looked at it and said, hey, turn the letters around. It spells hope. So he named his, you know, protocol the HOPE protocol, and they were all treating a group of patients as part of a study. Well, of course, his patients did better than any other group of patients because they were getting HOPE. The other people were getting EPO. What a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, whether it's beliefs and experiences from a past life or things you believe today, and it's all hypnotic in a sense. It's all affecting us and our consciousness. And the messages that we put in there are what creates who we are. So, you know, how you get up in the morning and what your attitude is and everything else. And, yeah, life is difficult. That's something I'm always sharing with people. But it is an interesting experience. So I'm here to enjoy it and experience it until I get tired of it.
For sure. And I bet, and I wonder how you feel with seeing your wife's face a number of times. Do you feel when you come around again that you will be connected with your wife as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard for me to believe that we won't do this again and again. We just had a wedding anniversary a few weeks ago. And
what number?
Let me say, I put this in a newspaper article because I write so many letters to the editor that a few years ago I said, why don't you just let me write a column and I won't drive you crazy. And so they let me write a column for the paper. But this one started with a line from Country Western. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it with you. See? And I think that belongs on our headstone someday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, yeah, we'll recycle again. I'm sure we'll show up and meet each other again somewhere. But the article started with, my wife and I are celebrating 45 wonderful years of married life, and 45 out of 58 isn't too bad. And she bursts out laughing when I read that to her, the article. But, but you see, I'd say again, you know, I talked about love. The other side is laughter. I mean, that to me is what you should build your life out of.
Right.
Bricks of love and the mortar of laughter, you know, of humor. Because relationships will never end if love and laughter are a part of them.
That is correct.
They heal all the wounds.
Right, right. Exactly so. Well, we're coming down to the last minute and a half. What would you like to leave the listeners with today?
I think it's really keeping an open mind. I mean, if you had said to me 30 or 40 years ago, do you think you'd ever be talking about things like this? I'd say, no, that's nuts. You know, but again, because I wasn't worried about judgment. See, that's a big part of it. If you say, oh, I don't worry about how people feel about me or think about me, because I grew up with love from family. You know, I always say I got along with God, I had loving parents, I did okay at school, so I wasn't worried about what did everybody else think. Then I was able to explore and be a little different. And I found, of course, that if the differences made sense, then people adopted them. My way of putting it was nobody's against success. So you may share experience, people say, oh, that's crazy. But if it helps you and it helps them, then suddenly it's not so crazy anymore.
And that's right.
They're adopting things that they never would have believed in because it's helping them. So I'd say to people, keep an open mind. Don't need to understand or explain how something happens. You know, life is a miracle, so enjoy it and experience it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that, Bernie. And that's it for today, everyone. Until the next time with Dr. Bernie Siegel, Mind Health Matters. Bye.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.